You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and today is, I believe, the 26th of January, 2022. I apologize for not moving more quickly on my donations. I know I've lost money already, thanks to me losing PayPal. What I'm going to do very soon, as soon as I'm done here, is set up on my personal website a new donation platform because I rely on you guys to keep me independent. Not to mention planning a wedding takes a few dollars, and now I have that assistant and supporter backing me that I so desperately needed. I'm not very good in details. I'm a forest person. Jennifer is a tree person, to use that metaphor. So I will get this set up. You check my website, rustjournal.org, and then from there it'll be put on Radio Albion, which I think is where the bulk of my donations come from. Well, today we're going to talk about, of course, something that I'm professionally obligated to talk about, and that is this disaster in Ukraine. It's really a perfect location for the regime to try to start a war. It's almost totally unknown to the Western population, and there is a socially acceptable anti-Russian racism which exists right under the surface in Western societies, especially English-speaking ones. You don't see this in Central Europe as much. Things are a lot more nuanced there than people realize in terms of public opinion. But at least starting during the Crimean conflict, the Anglo-American world has held Russians for reasons unknown, other than, you know, wartime propaganda, as somehow untrustworthy. And the rationale for this, what the regime is asking American troops to die for, is entirely unknown. It's almost as if the regime is seeing how far it can push. Can it make young men, it'll be exclusively men, it's not the men and women of the armed forces, it's the men of the armed forces who do the dying, will they die for nothing? And which I think is the idea here, and to be honest with you, I think they will. I mean, come on, college is expensive. So, for those of you who only know the media version of events, which is in every detail incorrect, deliberately incorrect, and I'm not going to mention Johnson's Law again because it's obvious here, it should be in your mind right now. The claim is that Russia, for no clear reason, I mean, they don't give an obvious reason except power for its own sake, that Russia and Vladimir Putin, as its leader, wants to recreate the USSR. Since that system collapsed in the late 80s, I'm not sure what good it would do to resurrect it. But even if that were true, that doesn't affect the US in the tiniest little bit. So, and the US has claimed Russian aggression, which in truth has never existed, everywhere from the Baltics to Belarus to Poland to Ukraine to Central Asia and even in the Far East. They claim, American politicians will claim, intelligence reports never citing them, and all their information comes from anonymous sources. None of it ever pans out, but because of the ignorance of the political class, of those in the State Department, Defense Department, and the average American citizen. The ignorance is so deep that it becomes just a matter of fact. Oh yes, Russia is planning on invading Ukraine. How that would benefit Russia is a mystery. Let's say you had some lunatic in Moscow that wanted to invade Ukraine. Well, it would take, if anyone knows anything about military theory, it would take about 1 million men to do. They'd have to have the full support of Central Europe. They'd have to realize there'd be cracks in NATO, that there wouldn't really be a response. It would lead to a bloodbath at all levels and would destroy an economy in Ukraine that's already pretty much destroyed. Not to mention lead to a global catastrophe. But even if that were the case, I mean, Russia does have a claim to invade Ukraine, since it's being armed by the West. The government there was installed by the CIA and Finance Capital in 2014, where the actual government was overthrown. The law code rewritten almost immediately to make sure that all those who had been in prison for various financial crimes were released. They simply rewrote the laws. And the almost exclusively Jewish oligarchy, and I'll get to their names here in a minute, I've talked about them at length elsewhere, took over. You know, both the prime minister and the president, as of a few years ago, I'm talking about Poroshenko here, are Jewish. The entire ruling class is Jewish. And Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, agrees with me in that respect. So the claim, more specifically, is that Russia is this inherently expansionist power, which is pure projection from Washington, that Russia is an expansionist power that is, for no clear reason, putting a huge army on Ukraine's border, clearly to either intimidate or invade Ukraine. And that's as far as it goes. This has been the case with Georgia, the Baltics, Poland. It's the exact same story. No evidence, not even a theory that would explain it. And it's more ridiculous given the fact that Russia wouldn't benefit from any of this. Belarus is a very independent country that has profited massively from cooperation with Russia. Ukraine has always been dependent, whether it's an independent state or not, dependent on the Russian market. It produces nothing that the West wants, that it couldn't get elsewhere. You have European countries that are, companies that are shuttering their windows and closing their doors, but somehow Ukraine could do a better job. It's one of the many drug routes into Europe, and because of the Judaic takeover, it's a source of sex slaves, pornography, and prostitution. So the level of ignorance, it's like Russiagate. The level of ignorance you have to have, the simple faith that the regime tells the truth, doesn't really have to give you evidence, is overwhelming. I mean, can you imagine living this way? Imagine being an American congressman or American university professor or a public intellectual who actually believes this nonsense. And when you ask even basic questions, you are somehow referred to as a stooge of the Russians or an insurrectionist. Because the BlackRock investment group that controls the quote-unquote Biden administration wants to put the entire right wing on trial as insurrectionists. Didn't matter that most American cities burned in the summer of 2020. No, a very minor action at the U.S. Capitol, which, by the way, was done by the left 100 times over in the past, that is the security threat. Just as ridiculous as that is the claim that any Russian designs on Ukraine is the security threat for the U.S. It's absurd at all levels. There are millions of Russians who live in Ukraine. They have every right to take action to secure their interests. And that goes for the Baltics as well. And the government that was installed by the U.S. in 2014, of course, by then Ukraine was already a third world state. It had lost a huge portion of its GDP. We'll get into that in a minute. But then it got worse and worse as the years went on. And the truth is that over the years, The Russians have maintained about 55,000 men roughly near the Ukrainian border. That's a matter of policy. But since the U.S. has been pouring money and weapons into Ukraine, they have every right to increase that substantially. January 14th, the New York Times, now let's get this straight here, actually floated the idea that Russia is planning a false flag attack to justify an invasion. It wasn't that long ago where I was told that false flags throughout American policy somehow were kooky theories. Now it's promoted by the New York Times. So long as the Russians do it, conspiracy theories are perfectly acceptable. As always, anonymous sources and zero evidence. They don't believe that they have any reason to give them. Just over the last 2 years, or I should say at least since Maidan, the overthrow of the government in 2014, you've had at least $3 billion wasted from Western banks, knowing full well that given the nature of the oligarchy that runs the country, that they'll never see again. Tens of billions over the last decade, given knowing that they'll never see it again. Because the connection between Jewish oligarchs in Ukraine and elsewhere are so close, that's really all that matters. And of course, a lot of this is prefaced on the idea that Ukraine is an independent state. Ukraine is about as independent as Kosovo is. Ukraine is run by the American embassy in Kiev in close contact with these oligarchs. Well, the UK, the US, in different times, as well as the French, already admitted that they're not going to send a soldier to defend Ukraine. One of the reasons that I don't think this is going to happen is that NATO will fall to pieces, if it isn't already. And that was said at one of the preliminary meetings to both the Geneva and the Brussels meeting. But, and I've said this 100 times, and I'm starting to see this now in the Russian press, but that the U.S. so-called foreign policy community in D.C., is incredibly ignorant. The area studies, like I did in grad school, have been thrown away, and now it's more statistical modeling more than anything else. There's no language requirement. There's no comparative requirement whatsoever. Journalists, so-called journalists, go to the State Department, Amnesty International, the Pentagon, all these NGOs. That's where they get their information. Rarely do they ever leave their office. Now, it's claimed that there's roughly a 40% among the Ukrainian population, 40% want to join NATO. That's ridiculous, partially because a good chunk of the country can't be pulled since in 2014 the East seceded from Ukraine proper. It's, of course, much lower than that. Statistics concerning Ukraine have to be taken with a grain of salt, and you have to know the Ukrainian economy in detail, as I do, to understand why that's the case. So, what are some of the reasons? Now, you know, I've come up with a list of them. What is going on here, as far as the rationale? And it comes down to a few, and I've developed these over the years, because this has been going on a long time. Ideology. Don't underestimate ideology as a main focus for this assault. Vladimir Putin and the Russian population as a whole is the total polar opposite of the Western oligarchic and monopolistic ruling class, since he is both a nationalist and a Eurasianist and has insisted that the Orthodox Church and Christianity be at the absolute center of not just policy, but also of education. And he's overseen this massive expansion of the church in Russia and has eliminated so many of the Western NGOs, including the Islamic fundamentalists, which always serve Washington, and the Protestant evangelicals, who are nothing more than stooges for both Zionism and Washington. And Putin has thrown them out, not only because they're incredibly ignorant, they know nothing about Russia, but they did this under American auspices, and they've invaded the country back in the 90s, even putting onion domes on their churches. The Jehovah's Witnesses did the same thing. Putin has thrown all of them out. He is the polar opposite of the American politician. And, of course, the American politician wishes he had the popularity of Vladimir Putin. The Russia-China alliance, I've been talking about this. It seems like I've been talking about this since I could walk. You know, everyone's talking about it now, as always. But I've been talking about it for a decade and a half, and that this is a military alliance, no different than probably a lot more solid than NATO is. Russian success is another one. The fact that without having a liberal democracy, which doesn't mean they don't have representative government, they most certainly do, but liberal democracies don't create representative government. Russian success is not supposed to happen according to the so-called Washington Consensus. The idea that oligarchic markets, which are anything but free, capitalism, and of course the rule of the wealthy in political parties and elections, that's the only thing that could create quote-unquote progress. Progress is defined as anything that benefits either monopoly or oligarchy in a country. Now, it's usually not something I talk about, but the defense industry is extremely obnoxious in pushing for a war with a major power, knowing full well that the U.S. is in no way able to win this. If they were defeated, let's face it, the U.S. was defeated pretty much everywhere it went, including in World War II, especially since, you know, the Soviet Union did most of the fighting in World War II. The U.S. did some mopping up, and that was really about it. The cream of the German infantry was on the Eastern Front. But ever since then, every war from Korea on has been a miserable failure. You could even say, I mean, even Grenada, massive casualties, unreported. I've talked about that at length. Panama, which, you know, the place is still a third world hole, so that was a failure. Militarily, everything else has seen a massive defeat of American forces. The political regime, especially since COVID, is extremely unpopular. This war will serve not really a distraction, but as a way to rally the population around something. If the war is won, which is a pipe dream, although don't, you know, these people are delusional enough to actually think that Russia is this, you know, poor country. But a military victory would justify liberalism throughout the world. World War II was a battle between nationalism and the left, liberalism and socialism. So when Hitler was defeated, so was the ideology. And this is how wars work. If the U.S. were to defeat Russia and China, which is, I can't even say it with a straight face, if Russia can defeat, U.S. can defeat Russia, China, liberalism would be triumphant, and any other ideology would fail miserably. The rule of oligarchy, as I said, this is one of the main reasons. Liberalism is connected to oligarchy. It's really one and the same thing. Supporting the oligarchy in Ukraine and its close connections with the West is an essential cause. And I don't want to ignore oil and gas. The Russians have placed themselves, and it's perfectly rational given geography, as the provider of petroleum and natural gas to Europe. They do it very efficiently at a very low price. This is why if you go to any politician screaming for war with Russia and or China, you will see huge energy sector donations as well as the military industrial complex. You know, it's really common. The left always says these wars are for defense industries, and I never really joined them until now. And also because the left isn't anti-war. The left was anti-war only in Vietnam when the communists were the alleged victims. And, of course, that war was deliberately lost. But the left doesn't do this anymore. Remember the laughable cry in the Middle East, no war for oil, despite the fact that the U.S. doesn't get a teacup of oil from that part of the world. And, of course, you know, the natural resources, you can't deny its importance. Russia is not dependent on oil. It is a lazy, I've been through this at great length. My Patreon page is I have several articles there destroying the thesis that Russia is somehow dependent. Canada and Norway are far more dependent on petroleum than Russia is. So overall, and I'm willing to say that stopping this center of resistance back in the 90s, in grad school, I made the claim that Russia is the only country in the world that has the size, the military, the natural resources, the possibility of autarky or being self-sufficient, and the ideological history of putting a brake on leftist liberal capitalist expansion and imperialism. Russia and China are the only reason we don't live in a one-world tyranny. Russia and China are the only reasons, and I say it's singular because they are a unity these days, and their allies in Central Asia and elsewhere, and I include Germany in that respect. This alliance is the only reason liberalism hasn't dominated and controlled everything. So that's just the beginning, but those are my main, and I'm willing to say that ideology is far more important than most people will give credit. So there are negotiations going on, and all we hear, of course, is the press release. The press releases don't tell us anything. But Russia has made three basic demands here, and it all prefaced on the idea that the U.S. simply has no business in this area. Ukraine is not a trading partner of the U.S. It has nothing to do, pretty much, with the EU or Europe or anything. So that's why I had to give a list of reasons why this is important. But Russia's demands are three. The first is that there is no expansion of NATO and liberal ideology to the east. Number two, the withdrawal of military forces from Eastern Europe, which is certainly reasonable, given the fact that the U.S. has been bankrupt for a very long time. And number three, the removal of all nuclear weapons from Europe, which used to be a rallying cry of the left, but all of a sudden I'm not hearing that anymore. The U.S. has no security interest in the area. And this is, as always, where the ruling class fails. Go to, you know, Lindsey Graham and ask him why the U.S. is involved in that part of the world, and you won't get a rational answer. Now, the Washington Post, which owns quite a bit of the media in that part of the world, published a study that shows that the ignorance of the American, and this is only in the U.S., is directly proportional to the desire for war. In other words, the stupider you are about Eastern Europe, the more you're going to want war. This comes from, you know, one in six, and I think this is no surprise, I've been saying this for a long time, one in six Americans can find Ukraine on a map. That's roughly 16%. And actually, they discovered this, that the farther away, and people point on a map, and it's like the Sudan or India, they think that's Ukraine. The farther away from actual Ukraine they point, the more the desire for war increases. And I've been saying this for a long time, and I'm yet again vindicated that public ignorance and the invention of this Russia threat from whole cloth, and absolutely no evidence for it, is essential for this foreign policy to be expected. The median respondent. The median respondent, so you line all the respondents up, you pick the one in the middle. The median respondent was 1,600 miles off from where Ukraine actually is. The worst part of this, and it's no surprise, is that college graduates taken as a group were no better. There were 21% could find Ukraine on a map. Everyone else was, you know, between 10 and 13%. Military households did just as badly. Again, should not surprise you. As I come from a military family, I realize now that lying to yourself about what you're fighting for is absolutely essential to stay in the military. I also think that a war with the East would permit the BlackRock administration to throw people like me in a gulag. The Biden administration sees, and BlackRock by extension, sees any opposition to him and them as being an insurrection. This January 6th mystification goes a lot deeper than I think we realize. I have contacts that tell me that this is the term used by the regime for anyone who disagrees. Warfare has, without exception, in the Western world, especially in the U.S., has been an excuse for clamping down on any kind of dissent. Of course, Vietnam, this was financed, the so-called dissent was financed by the regime, and it's one of the rare times where state policy on the one hand differed with regime policy on the other. It rarely happens, but it definitely happened under Johnson and Nixon. I've spoken at great length about the vaccines. I will never allow that crap to enter my body or anyone I love. I'll take the air out of their tires before I permit this. But Russia has come up with its own not-for-profit vaccine, the Sputnik vaccine. And the U.S. State Department has spent a small fortune convincing Europeans to not take it, and only allowing the American vaccine at inflated prices, which I could be wrong here, but it suggests to me that the Russian vaccine is less dangerous. Germany, as I've said 100 times, has been a relatively pro-Russian voice because a huge portion of German trade is in Russia. They take advantage of the Nord Stream pipeline and are simply invested in the area. The U.S., on the other hand, has financed the Green Party. It doesn't get a huge amount. It's sort of like the Libertarian Party in the Trump election. All of a sudden, this very minor third party is on CNN every night because two candidates were installed by the regime to maybe take certain Republicans away from Trump. Now, of course, now they're back in obscurity where they belong. So the U.S. is doing the same thing in Germany, promoting the Green Party. Joseph Fischer is the founder of that party, and he is one of the architects of the NATO's invasion and destruction of Yugoslavia. Also, for reasons that at the time were considered absolutely indisputable, this is mostly prior to the web, which now, as we know, were totally made up and invented. There was no genocide over there except for the Muslims. Now, this may end up being a two-parter. I'm not 100% sure. We all know who Victoria Nuland is, an incredibly ignorant Karen type who was one of the architects of the 2014 coup in Ukraine. The CIA head, former CIA head Bill Burns, fully admitted the American role in that, which, of course, I said at the time, but was denied by both parties and every institution with any kind of power. But Nuland wrote an article, not exactly scholarship, in Foreign Affairs, which is one of the elite regime publications. This is back in 2020. And she's worried that the American public, as benighted as they are, has no faith in the U.S. to really defend itself or to promote itself abroad. And they're right, of course. There's nothing to promote anywhere. The defeat in Afghanistan in particular is something that has eliminated all trust in the military and in the Defense Department. And essentially what she says she wants to do is use social media. Social media is this revolutionary platform, which is why people like me are removed from it. That social media is going to begin pumping out myths about Russia, and she has no problem admitting this. Social networks are the platform for propaganda, and we've seen this in everywhere from Kyrgyzstan to Hong Kong to Ukraine. Social media is essential to connect different revolutionary groups funded by the U.S. together. And, of course, anyone who says otherwise is removed from these social networks, as if proving the point. And that this is going to be the foundation of so-called protests. And these protests are financed by the West. They don't have any of these leaders. As I said a million times, go through every one and look at their background information. All are Western and financed by the West and educated in the West. They have minimal connection to the country they claim to represent. And Nuland fully admits that the mythology, especially the mythology around Navalny, and I have several broadcasts on him in particular, as a so-called opposition figure, despite the fact that most Russians prior to all this had no idea who he was, also educated in the West, of course, speaking English, that this was the opposition figure that they were going to create and invent. They did the same thing in Venezuela. So she fully admits, and no one seemed to notice, that this is the American policy. She has no difficulty talking about the mythology that the U.S., talking about corporate capital here, especially financial capital, will invent and promote via social media. And young people, especially those living in cities who have some connection to foreign capital, will accept this. And many of them, of course, we know from POWs that have been captured in places like Eastern Ukraine, are mostly foreign anyway. I've spoken at length about the couple in Belarus, the so-called opposition figure who their YouTube channel, even now, I don't think broke 300,000. Despite saturation, international media coverage, they can't break 300,000 subscribers. These are nobodies. They exist only because corporate capital supports them. One of the reasons that Donald Trump, one of the many reasons that Donald Trump was destroyed, or the attempt to destroy him, including killing him during the campaign, is to prevent him from normalizing relations with Russia. The Russiagate was, and they knew from the beginning, was a nonsensical invention. They can't even agree on what it is. They never even spelled it out, what exactly this is. They've just, bits and pieces they let kind of leak out, and as the media called it Russiagate, CNN called it Russiagate, was invented not so much to justify Trump's victory, to nullify Trump's victory, but to render him powerless in dealing with Moscow, because he wanted relations normalized. Hillary Clinton openly spoke about the immediate war with most of the world that she would launch if she's elected president, specifically Iran and much of Central Asia. And Trump ran against this. Now, Trump's policy had been very anti-Russian almost his entire tenure, but that's not how he campaigned. But the invention of Russiagate, as absurd as it was, and the saturation coverage that this got, was to prevent Trump having any positive relationships with Russia. Had it not been for Russiagate, this war could not possibly have occurred. And everyone, as I've been saying for ages, and I can't stress this enough, Christianity and nationalism are the two enemies of the regime. The regime is greatly, but not entirely, Judaic. So this is the foundation. This is what democracy means. It doesn't matter how popular a political party might be, if they are nationalist or Christian nationalist, whatever, anything like that, agrarian, they will be branded as non-democratic and sanctions will be placed on them. Now, I'm not going to get into the idea of sanctions here. I had the feeling this is going to be a two-parter. But sanctions really are mostly symbolic. Companies pull out of places like Iran, not because there's any sanctions on them, they get in any kind of trouble, but because they're afraid of an American invasion and the resulting instability. There's a lot of American companies working in Russia and Iran, and certainly, billions in China. So sanctions, clear to me. Have you ever heard of an American company being sued by the Justice Department for breaking sanctions? Have you ever heard of this before? It's because they're mostly symbolic. Of course, you've never heard of it. There was one Iranian student that was brought to court for this, but that's about it. Otherwise, you really can't you can't find anyone who's been sued for breaking sanctions, at least an American. So the motivations are deep, and as far as the financial, and the financial is connected with the industrial and energy sectors. It's not just the Nord Stream pipeline. Nord Stream 2, which has heavy sanctions against it from the U.S., the Germans still support it, is going to go through the Baltic Sea and it dumps out into Germany and hence the rest of Europe at an extremely low price compared to what anyone else could do. It's mostly a natural gas pipeline. The Power of Siberia 1 and 2 is far more powerful because it's one of the final steps to wed Russia and China together, both with petroleum, because China has no petroleum resources and has minimal natural gas resources. And this has been one of the main, other than ideology, one of the main reasons for the connection between Russia and China. Power of Siberia would completely eliminate any Russian concern for the European market whatsoever. This deepening alliance between those two countries means that they are totally and completely impervious to American sanctions. American sanctions have not had, despite what the American media will say, has not had a gigantic impact on either the Chinese or the Russian economy, partially because there's no penalties for breaking them, and partially because the countries who are profitable in Russia or China aren't going to pull out. All the sanctions on China, I've never heard of American company pulling out because they're terrified about being violators. Now, differently, you also have a second Power of Siberia that is just beginning to break ground. Should be this year. Now, the first one that I mentioned was that started in 2019. It was a $400 billion deal. And the second is even larger. China has a 20% stake in the Novatek $27 billion project and a 20% stake in the Arctic project, which is about $21 billion. You're talking about a massive, almost a revolution in terms of energy. So this is why it's important. When you hear one of these, the American political class is so incredibly ignorant. In the East, you see much higher level debates. It is no different from, this like action movie dialogue, people like Chris Christie. And the Republicans, as always, are the worst. Somehow they claim that Ronald Reagan supporting anti-communist guerrillas in places like Angola or Nicaragua somehow translates to the Republicans having an obligation to invade Ukraine or Russia. It doesn't make any sense. Anti-communism is one thing. This is, of course, they're attacking a country whose policies are pretty much their own. But they can't admit that. So it all comes down to some vague slogan about democracy. So what are Republicans saying? Roger Wicker is one of the most obnoxious. He's from a senator from Mississippi. This is somebody who is talking about not just direct military action, but possible nuclear war. Lindsey Graham is, of course, one of the others. Congressman Mike Turner has also called not just, again, for soldiers on the ground, but the possibility of nuclear war. Now, this was never even remotely discussed during the so-called Cold War. This is not a Cold War. The regime is trying to prevent any economic contact with Russia. Yet when the USSR existed, there were huge economic contracts. You can't have a Cold War with a country, Cold or Hot War, while financing their economic sectors. But that's exactly what happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and the 80s, too. But if you look, whether it be Lindsey Graham, Roger Wicker, go to who finances them. Now, Wicker is particularly obnoxious because if you go to his, Open Secrets, there's a whole bunch of places to find, or just the FEC website. His main donors are in the defense sector, which is another way of saying that the man is paid to promote war with Russia, less so China. Still, I'm not entirely sure how this would even benefit them, since a defeat, which is inevitable, will ricochet on them. North Korea has already stated that it will destroy South Korea in the event of any American action. Lindsey Graham has spoken openly about the use of nuclear weapons, although specifically he was talking about North Korea, but he has hinted at it with Russia. Chris Christie, when he was running for president, you imagine this buffoon, talked about shooting down Russian planes as a way to draw the line in the sand for something. This is increasingly common in the Republican Party. The only thing they don't have is evidence or a rationale. Now get this. This is very difficult to even state. The State Department has made the claim that Russia needs to be destroyed because they are planning on installing a puppet government in Kiev. It's difficult to even utter that, since the U.S. fully admits that it's installed puppets all over the world, especially Ukraine. But that's the logic of empire. Psychology, and I'm not saying this in a flippant way, psychology can be called on here, because a level of delusion, it's not merely ignorance, but it's delusion and neuroticism that the regime has towards its ability to influence events, its ability to wage war, their refusal to see blatant evidence in front of their face, or a lack of blatant evidence, depending on the issue, and ignoring it entirely, cherry-picking what they want, and sending people to die as a result. Things like deflection, that goes, you know, to some extent. Even narcissism. You know, the regime functions like a narcissistic individual. And narcissism is based on the idea that the myth, the story that you tell about yourself isn't true, and you know it isn't true. So it's perpetual unhappiness and insecurity, and you need to destroy anyone who can expose you. That's the core of clinical narcissism. But, you know, it's not just egotism. Egotism is, you know, everyone's egotistical. That's not the issue. The issue is, you know, egotism is based on this intense insecurity. Deep down, the Western world knows that it's dying. It's permitted itself to be invaded over several decades with hostile non-whites from the Middle East, North Africa, and elsewhere. It's taken over their cities, destroyed police departments, and created a crime spree in places like Sweden and North Italy that that Europe has never seen. That there is nothing to defend. There's nothing to, so things like vague comments about democracy. And again, I'll say this for the millionth time. The term democracy has nothing to do with campaigns, elections, and voting, as you may think. It has nothing to do with the procedures of electing people. It is purely ideological like everything else. BlackRock has, in the guise of the so-called Biden administration, is talking about increasing the American military force to 10,000 people in Ukraine. Well, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The numbers that they're talking about, this is the case for, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, are too low for any kind of action. They'd be slaughtered. You know, you would need, you know, to invade a country, especially one as large as Ukraine. You need full control over the economy, and millions of men at your disposal. And even then, as we saw in World War II, doesn't necessarily work out. Ukraine is about the size of France. That had a draft, but still has a draft. And therefore, most of your middle-aged men have military training and who know how to shoot, which is one of the reasons that the East was able to defeat the American-supported Ukrainian army back in 14 and 15. Peace is not profitable. The left, since its existence, and Solzhenitsyn and Edmund Burke have spoken about this at length, the left needs constant instability. Its agenda is unnatural. Its agenda is painful. Only hypnosis, only the inculcation of mental illness in a population, only total media control, violence, always insecurity, a population always off balance, this is the only way that their agenda could ever be promoted. Their agenda, what they're pushing now, if they were talking about it 40 years ago in the open, they'd be laughed at. Now, of course, it's taken seriously because of the constant degeneration of Western man. Peace isn't profitable. And they're willing to invent whatever they need to, including, you know, every conceivable conspiracy theory that New York Times and Washington Post promotes without question, without evidence. If we were to say this about them, we'd be thrown in prison as insurrectionists, which is what BlackRock wants to see happen, or at least have our lives destroyed, which, you know, is even better than throwing them in prison. But what would be the function of a handful of men? You know, supposed to be 1,000 men left in Afghanistan. The point is to have a false flag used against them. Of course, the U.S. is talking about false flags only because it's planning one. The only way the left could even remotely get the war, and the Republicans, they're essentially one unit now, can get the war they want is if Americans are killed, and then total media control has to say that this was Russians doing this for no reason, just because they're dying for an invasion. All these stories about poisoning, I've ripped these to pieces. They're nonsensical. They fall apart. They can't even ask who benefits. Clearly, the Russians don't benefit. These people are nobodies. They only become somebody because there's an alleged attempt on their lives. So, what is it in Ukraine that concerns the West so much? Remember, when you look at statistics, and the World Bank tends to be more honest than others, you need to make it far worse than it actually is. So unemployment is something like, you know, they'll claim it's 10%. Those are just those who are publicly stating this in order to receive benefits. Same thing in the U.S. So if it's 10% on paper, then it must be maybe 30% in reality. Because there's a lot of people after the collapse of Ukraine in the 90s, throughout the 90s, under, you know, American EU auspices, much of the economy went underground, which therefore can't really can't be placed in a quantitative model. This has been the case for some time. You don't have a lot of functioning Ukrainian corporations, so of course you have mass unemployment in Ukraine. Of course, the massive decline in the 90s. Most of its profitable industries either were liquidated, taken apart and sent elsewhere, or simply fell to pieces in the 90s. The revolutionary coup in 2014, that year alone saw a 7% decline, the following year a 12% decline in GDP. This is catastrophic. It has lowest GDP per capita in Europe despite being the most educated society. Ukraine is in a position. It has the resources and the market and the connections and the education to be a dominant first world economy. And yet it's been pushed to now fourth world status and starvation because of the likes of people like Lindsey Graham over the years. And of course, parties in the West has nothing to do with anything. Republicans and Democrats say the same thing and largely for the same reason. This is how you know that there is a blatant conspiracy afoot. Conspiracy just simply being powerful people being powerful people. They're not going to tell us about stuff. We have to go find out. Even in the 90s, you know, this is one of the reasons that any support for the West in the Ukrainian population is nonsensical. In 1992, the GDP declined by 9.9%. In 95, 12%. Between 04 and 07, you had substantial growth because you had pro-Russian governments in Ukraine. But by 09, another 12% decline. So, the Ukrainian economy is really based on a handful of corporations. Medinvest is one of the dominant ones, which is Akhmetov's company. Akhmetov tends to be vaguely supportive of Russia. It's a coal company, which makes certain sense. ATB Market, which is retail, which is run by a Russian. DTEK, also an energy firm, another Akhmetov publication. They're an organization. They're functioning mostly in solar and air power, wind power, I should say. And the Fozzy Group, and I was disappointed, F-O-Z-Z-Y, disappointed that this was nothing to do with the Muppets. And they deal, and of course, it's a company that is, they're all connected with West to a great extent, and they're constantly, they've been under investigation for tax evasion and money laundering for a very long time. The president is Vladimir Kostelman, not exactly a Ukrainian name. You're going to see very few Ukrainian names in the ruling class of the country. You know, ArcelorMittal, which is a steel company financed by Citigroup. Its president is a guy named Mauro Longobardo. Again, not exactly a Ukrainian name. Russian owns Titus Ukraine, which is a tobacco monopoly. Igor Kiseyev. And you have people like Jim North and Lucio Genovese running Fair Expo, which is another steel firm. This is a handful of what's left of the economy, none of them actually run by Ukrainians. But who runs this economy? I talk about the Jewish oligarchs. I've been talking about them for ages and ages and ages. And, of course, you don't see a whole lot of Ukrainian names. Now, I've talked about also the idea of the Maidan Revolution in 2014 as ushering in new Khazaria. That's something that Haaretz and other Israeli publications were very loud in announcing, too. This isn't my creation. People like Leo Feinberg, not the most Ukrainian name in the world, very close to the State Department and is the director of the Institute for Judaic Studies in Ukraine, an extremely powerful figure. Bernard Levy, Espashinsky, who's a banker. He's a guy who hired the snipers in 2014. Of course, Yulia Tymoshenko, probably one of the most corrupt individuals without principle on the planet, is Judaic. Dmitry Firtash, who comes up often in my studies, again, not exactly a Ukrainian name because he's not Ukrainian, is part of the media monopoly. Viktor Pinichuk also is part of the media control. M. Kippelman, you see a lot of names like that. Again, not Ukrainian names. Poroshenko, you know, is actually, people don't realize, Poroshenko is a hyphenated name. I believe it's Poroshenko Waltzman. And of course, he controlled Fifth Channel TV for some time. Konstantin Zhivago, despite the last name, controls most of the newspapers in Kiev. Put together, they put up at least $5 billion for the 2014 revolution and now are in power over the country. And because they rewrote the law code, remember, Tymoshenko had been in and out of prison for a long time. It's blatant corruption. Most ridiculous, starting in the 1990s, why she's so wealthy. They're well aware. One of the reasons that they fought so fiercely in 2014, and actually Tymoshenko was in prison at the time, is that if a national or even basically representative government ever took over, all of these guys would be behind bars. They are the pinnacle of corruption, especially in the lawless 90s. So they had to rewrite the laws. This is one of the few reasons that they're able to function. I think it was 2 weeks ago, I did a broadcast on the condition of the U.S. Navy. On my Patreon channel, I have about 5 or 6 substantial articles on the condition of the American military. If you go, do some website searching, especially with the Air Force, but all the branches, you'll see that they are blatantly dedicated to the left. They are officially feminist. Women, especially non-white women, are held to a much lower standard. They're promoted much more quickly. As I've spoken about at great length, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and now the BlackRock administration is purging the officer corps. It is pure chaos. There's no one to lead anything. The end of the Obama administration, hundreds of generals and admirals were forcibly retired because they weren't considered ideologically suitable for what the regime had in store for them. The people who now run the military are careerists. They're not respected, and they don't have any real ability. They're there, kind of like in the Soviet era, for their ideological rigidity and reliability more than anything else. And the reason I did that is to show that the U.S. is in no way threatening to Russia. If you go through, you put in the leftist agenda, homosexuality, the trans money, the military pays for these operations. This is what they're fighting for. So they have to go to their men and say, this is what you're going to die for. The West doesn't exist. It can be reborn, but at the moment it doesn't exist. It's been invaded by so-called migrants. White people are supposed to hate themselves. They're thrown out of jobs. Anyone who stands up for themselves ends up being kicked out of all social media platforms. They lose their bank account, like myself. And it's these same guys are told, okay, now you go and fight a power that doesn't threaten us for that agenda, and you're going to die for it. Well, college might be expensive, but it's not that expensive. This is the reason that the BlackRock administration was so obsessed with purging the National Guard units after the so-called insurrection on January 6th. And I just found out just before I went on the air that a huge chunk of the Florida National Guard is in Ukraine. I haven't been able to connect those dots yet. Why Florida? I have the feeling it's to punish the governor. But because the U.S. is poor, see, initially the materiel, the military equipment being poured into Ukraine, of course, benefits Western defense contractors. But it's pretty useless. Since the Ukrainian army has always been still based on Soviet models with Soviet production methods. Yeah, they use AKs and all the rest of it. But so pouring materiel into Ukraine doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So you have National Guardsmen training the relatively small Ukrainian army in how to use them. So now you have chaos even there. So not only did I talk about the Navy, I mentioned the Navy only because they have more high-tech stuff than the Army does. These ships are extremely complicated, and you don't have a competent crew. This is why they're crashing all over the place. This is what the Russians do not have this. They don't have a for-profit defense industry. Most of it is state-owned. Same thing for China. The American defense industry, of course, outsources a lot of their labor, which means if they're ever really called upon to finance a war of attrition somewhere, any of these countries where they've invested could clearly just simply cut off the spigot, China being one. I don't think people realize how many defense contractors exist in from the U.S. investing in China to take advantage of low labor costs. Same thing for Vietnam and elsewhere. This is the level of ignorance. Profit is the only thing that matters. Warfare is profit, despite the fact that it's extremely short-sighted. So the West doesn't really exist. The West exists in a postmodern bankruptcy fantasy world with massive debt and massive unemployment. Belgium's debt is 140% of its GDP. In other words, it owes 40% what it has, 40% more than what it has. The EU in general, something like 85%, probably about 100% of GDP. Greece is 235% of GDP. Italy, 155% of GDP. In other words, these countries owe to the bankers far more than the whole country's worth. It's like your typical American, which means they own nothing. If you have to pay a mortgage on your house, you don't own the house. The bank does. Portugal, 133% of GDP. France, 116% of GDP. Spanish unemployment is something like 50%. This is the system that's being called democratic. This is a system that can't provide even basic goods, which allowed itself to be invaded and assaulted and arrested anyone who defended, especially women, in places like Sweden, where you had 50% of the police department resign because they were told to stand down and allow women to be raped and destroyed and groomed, young people groomed. You have whole grooming gangs. Much of Stockholm is a no-go area for cops. Same thing for places like Detroit. And again, with no economy, everything owed to the bankers, this is what your 18-year-old being from Iowa is going to be told to die for, because Russia threatens the liberal project, which has already failed in Ukraine. Let me give you an example before we go here. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but one of the things that the new government in Ukraine did, and a lot of you know what I'm talking about, the Odessa massacre, May 2nd, 2014. There was a pro-Russian rally in Odessa and a slightly larger pro-Ukrainian one. This had been going on for some time around the country. The Ukrainian one, of course, had been financed by the U.S., and we know this because they immediately took to violence and drove the Russians into the building, regional federal trade union building. They used tires and gasoline to set the building on fire. Now, many of the escape routes had been previously sealed off, meaning that this had been planned from the beginning. The official claim was that 42 were killed, 32 from smoke, and then the rest from jumping. But the number, of course, is far higher. A lot of the smoke coming out of that building was yellow, suggesting chemical weapons. At least 50 were shot, so the number is much higher. One of the volunteer medics said that it was 180 were killed. And the police chief, the former police chief of Odessa, because he claimed the number was far higher, that this was a blatant massacre financed by the U.S. and the Ukrainian government, he was forced to flee to Transnistria because it wasn't safe for him in Ukraine. So that's just the beginning. This was one of their first acts, other than rewriting the law code and slaughtering pro-Russian activists. Most Russian media has been shut down. Social media has been purged, so you have to be pretty creative to get any alternative information from that has anything to do with being pro-Russia or anti-U.S., despite the fact that anti-U.S. feeling throughout the world, especially in the Slavic world, is extremely high. This is a deeply alienated, arrogant, Judaic ruling class that now openly depends on censorship to get its way. During the war, the Donbass in 2014, really including till now, most of the infantry deserted. They won very few victories against the Donbass movement. And I talked about the other day, Ruslan Komchak, who was a general in the Ukrainian army, who was one of the commanders at the Ilorsk in August of 2014. Once his strategy failed and casualties began to pile up, he ran in a very cowardly act. He left. He absconded. He took off. He showed up a couple weeks later in Kiev claiming a Russian invasion. He had to say that to justify why he lost so badly and why he ran away without telling anybody. The army was left leaderless at the time. That's where the Russian invasion story came from. It makes more sense. Well, I'm dealing with Russian regulars. Of course we couldn't fight back. Of course it wasn't true. That's where the Russian invasion came from, that man in particular. Thousands of his men were killed, not just in the battle itself, but also because of his cowardly desertion. So the desertion went right up to the high-level officers. What are the Ukrainians expected to die for here? No one takes their colonial government seriously. They're not going to fight the Russians. So, like it was in the past, the U.S., BlackRock can simply have to hire mercenaries, usually from Georgia and the Baltic states. There's nothing there. The U.S. doesn't have the money, doesn't have the men, doesn't have the support, neither does Ukraine. You can't expect countries that have no functional economy, that have no support from its population whatsoever, to do any kind of fighting and dying whatsoever for. I didn't quite get to everything I wanted to talk about, but this is the basic structure of the problems with American foreign policy in Eastern Europe and in Ukraine. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.